Well, welcome back to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast, brought to you in partnership with Odyssey Haven Coaching and Counseling, dedicated to the pursuit of answering the question, is it possible to do ministry without hating it? We have a theory that it just might be. Hey, I am Chad Garrison. I'm here with our producer, Brenton Hill.
Hey-o.
Brenton, so there's a phrase that I've heard ever since that I can remember, and it's that the only constant in life is change. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of course, right? I mean, we're in ministry, so it just comes with the territory. Yeah, here's the thing. Most people, when you ask them, do you like change, they usually say, nope. I think they use the word hate sometimes. I've even heard that. And if we're not careful, especially as leaders, we can just really become averse to this, especially in ministry. And more often than we want to admit, probably our leadership, our own leadership in ministry. Today, we get the opportunity to sit down for a conversation with our mutual good friend and lead pastor, Pastor Billy Holden. And I'm excited for people to hear this conversation because when we talk about the constant change of ministry, he really has learned to thrive. And as you'll hear him say, actually be fueled by change, whether it's expected or unexpected. And he really sees these moments as opportunities to innovate. And so really excited for people to hear that. You have anything else you want to contribute to that?
No, let's change it up.
Well said, and I hear you. So let me tell you a little bit about Billy. Billy has served in ministry leadership for 20 years. Billy and his wife, Mandy, planted Innovation Church in Lafayette, Indiana in 2010. They have a total of five kids, two of which are twins, were adopted out of foster care, and they actually have a huge heart for their community and to serve local foster families through fostering and hosting foster agencies and throughout their foster closet ministries they have started in Lafayette, Indiana. So I hope that you enjoy our conversation with Pastor Billy Holden. Billy, welcome to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We like to start with a question that it's really kind of sets the baseline for where the conversation will go, especially as we talk about ministry without hating it. So what does the word ministry mean to you?
Service. serving those that are in need. And there's all kinds of needs, but being somebody that's willing to just serve. That is how I spell ministry and how we love to spell ministry around here.
So talk to me about this. As a church planter, it's essentially a requirement. I think you could probably agree with me on this to stay agile and pliable, right? And can we maybe use that word? So how did the church planting process really shape your approach to change moving forward?
Well, one of the things, I mean, our name is Innovation Church. And so we knew not only from our experience, there was still a fact that the church didn't change. The church didn't meet or even try to influence the culture or change the culture or see even eye to eye. It was, hey, we do things this way, you do things that way, and you need to come do things our way. Instead of the church going to it, we as youth pastors, we went to the kids, we met them where they were at, met them, spoke their language, right? They were loving screamo and hardcore, and so we played screamo and hardcore. But ours was about Jesus, and ours was about getting them in a better direction. And so that is something we knew needed to change, because the message of the gospel is never going to change. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That is always going to be like who we are and what we're always going to be about. But the method, I mean, the method is totally pliable. The method is totally flexible. And so that year that we took, we visited many different churches. It was like 30 plus different churches, and went and saw it and said, why God here? Why are we here? And we saw that lack of pliability, that lack of change, that lack of going to the culture and instead of you have to come to us and you have to be like us, you have to fit into our mold before. Like we went to churches where we were asked to move out of their seats. Like, excuse me, you're in my seat. I need you to, like, I heard stories about that happening and I didn't believe that that was actually real, but nope. Yep. This is real life. And so one of the things I did is I was what, like 10 years in ministry already from kind of high school in youth group and being a leader and intern and into college and everything like that. I took a factory job. Like, this is a factory town. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go and inundate myself in this culture. And oh my, the normal stuff everyday people just talked about of who's hooking up with who and this and that. And I'm just, oh my, like this little Christian boy from age of three growing up in the church was just shocked. This is real life.
One of the things I've always admired about you in leadership, among many things, but is really your ability to keep things fresh within your ministry, within, you know, even your vision and things that you're doing. Can you tell me what drives that for you?
I would a little bit reference that chip, just a little bit, because of we don't change, we don't do things that way. I mean, I was literally told, like in a board meeting, we can't do that because the givers won't support it. As much as I think that's a good idea, as much as I think that's what needs to be done, like the tithers aren't going to get behind it.
Ooh.
I was like, if God's telling you to do it, you do it. Like, and so that was just, and so I've tried to remain a person of change. I forget a lot. Like people ask me like just chairs for a simple example. Like our chairs, I mean, sometimes from week to week are in a different spot. And so if we host a dinner, if we host an event, if we change up the seating or whatever, I forget how they go back. And so I don't put them back the same way. But I also, instill in that same, I guess, chippiness of you sat in my seat, I want to move your seat so you can't even find your seat the next week. Like nobody owns a seat here. Nobody owns a table. Like you come in, you get here early. Right now, if you even want to get a seat, you get here early and you get your seat, because if you don't, you're not going to have one. I like to play find the seat. We would actually do things in our youth building, even up in Michigan. We would totally renovate or change something around and then have the I Spy contest of find the 15 things that are different from this week to last week. And I don't think it was, it's nothing I intentionally do, but it might more be out of boredom, the chip on my shoulder. But my mom, I mean, I was a junior or senior and I got a king size waterbed for cleaning somebody's gutters, and I drained it and refilled it, moved it around, repositioned it in my room and refilled it by the time they woke up. Like I've always been a person of change let's do something different here. Let's rearrange the room. And so my wife trips over things or can't find things because I found a better place. I found a better usage. And I mean, that helped me a lot in factory life. Like, hey, there's a better way to do this. There's some better ergonomics to this. There's a better process to this. And so I was able to like save Toyota and Subaru millions of dollars. Like literally they measured how much time and money that I saved them just because I'm quirky. And said, hey, let's put this printer over here because it makes more sense. It just makes sense to do that.
So it sounds like you thrive on change, right? Is that a good way to say that?
I fueled by change.
Fueled,
I don't know.
Even better. Okay, so you're fueled by it. So then tell me the difference in your opinion of really change for, you know, the sake of innovation being more vision focused versus, it sounds like you've already kind of talked a little bit about this, but maybe unpack a little more about instead of being reactionary to things.
I don't know if this answers it, so I'll try to answer it and we'll see. But our area of town is the south side of Lafayette is supposed to receive 1,000 new households in the next 4 years.
You see the infrastructure, you see the growth, you go down to the county building and you say, okay, what's happening? Actually, last time I went down there, that 1,000 changed from like 20 to 2,600. And so once I heard that 1,000, I made sure it was true. And then I said, you know, what do we need to be as a church to meet the needs of those 1,000? Like what in our area doesn't exist, right? There is no YMCA or YWCA. The ones that are here are packed and full. The fitness centers are packed and full. The childcare on the south side, there's like two. And so I also heard of Section 8 housing coming in. And I was like, okay. So we picked up the phone and called Head Start and said, you know, there's a Section 8 housing development that's about to develop, and we would like to be on you guys' radar for expansion because we have 8 acres and we don't just want to mow it. And so we want to meet the needs, but I don't want to be a daycare manager. I don't want to be a principal. I don't want to do any of that stuff. And then we said, you know, what is the fitness centers not doing? This was the epiphany of watching my toddlers climb on the mall playgrounds where it's just a bunch of bored parents and toddlers climbing over fake bacon and everything like that in the big play centers in the mall. I was like, this would be great if it was surrounded by stair steppers, by treadmills, by workout machinery. You could watch your kids. Your kids can enjoy the day, but then you can hit those fitness goals that you want to hit. You could set up a movie room and work out with them as you're both like not talking about Bruno, like that's mm-hmm. how like, what are those needs? One of the reasons why we believe that we have this building today is because the road just right out here, less than 100 yards that I was driving on. We moved here. And when we moved here, there's Lafayette and West Lafayette. West Lafayette was Purdue country, and it was my idea. I was a youth pastor. I'll relate to college kids. Okay, that's great. Natural fit, natural progression of ministry. And that was my doing. We rented a house there. We bought a house there. This was just as we got to know the area. My father-in-law came into town soon after we moved here, and he wanted to see the local Foursquare Church. And so he drove over to the south side where this building is. Which is a good 20, 25 minutes away in Lafayette, on the far side of Lafayette, the farthest point away from West Lafayette where we were. And the only way I knew to get back was to get to 52. Well, 450 is right here. I can see it. And we turned on that road. We drove down that road. He said, Billy, would you ever move here? I said, nope, never. I said, everything I know about Lafayette, it's a factory town. The people are overworked and underpaid and always at work, and the families are broken, and I don't want to put my kids in that environment. And I think God just laughed and just said, yeah, that's exactly what you're going to go solve. And so it's been a burden on my heart to solve and to look for ways that we can solve that, ways that we can bring the family together. And I mean, we work with foster care and working on those families and helping those families and resourcing those families. But we also want to get to a counseling center with mental health and with marriage counseling and have that available. I believe that the church building should be a 24/7 area, whether it's through childcare, whether it's through therapy, whether it's through a fitness center, whether it's through exercise, a gymnasium. We should be able to wisely steward, right? Yeah. our building, yeah. So that it's meeting the needs and sharing the gospel to our community.
So based on, if I'm kind of tying things together, your definition of ministry, you know, being that of serve and really moving, instead of being reactionary to maybe what people are thinking or saying, it's actually opening your eyes and looking around you. And that's where you're driven as far as when it comes to implementing change. Coming up with innovation and moving forward, it's more of a what's around you and what is God saying in that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because and where we're at, it's not a deprived area. It's not a place that needs a food bank or a clothing bank. It is well off. And so what are those hidden needs? What are those needs that you're going to get to know through relationships? What are those addictions? Yeah. What are those brokenness? What is that marriage? What is that mental health that's hidden behind the corner? But also, we can also be a resource to those areas. We can be a resource and join forces and help those areas and help those churches that are. And we can be like, we've got a donation drop box in our area for Trinity Mission. And that's, they help those that are coming out of prison get acclimated back into life. And they have a program and get them back connected and off their addictions and everything. And so we said, they may never, they might not be in our area of town, but yeah, bring over a drop box and we'll put it in our parking lot.
So I want to shift gears just a little bit, but still stick within change. Okay. So life period, right? Especially in ministry, there's the type of change we're just talking about where you initiate and you're implementing. And then there's the type of change that everybody loves that just happens to you. And especially in ministry, we see that all of the time, right? So when it comes to the changes that are out of your control, how do you manage to, as you say, this type of stuff can fuel you, but with that, maybe it doesn't. How do you manage to stay sane or even still passionate when those things are coming that you didn't plan for, you didn't like, or didn't even ask for?
I think you got to learn from it, slow down and see what's actually going on, what's happening behind the situation, what's happening behind the change, what's causing that change. Is it a good change or is it a bad change? And so you got to look for what's fueling that change. I know, I mean, as you age, you have health changes and physical limitations. And just sometimes the raw energy isn't there. The just wake up and conquer the day. So one of those, I mean, that, And I mean, ministry can beat the living crap out of you. And so you go through a church split, you go through the stress, you go through the backstabbing or anything like that. And so there was definitely a season of that in my life where then I'm coming home and screaming at my kids, screaming at my wife, like everything like that takes it over the edge. The stress of life and ministry got there. And so for me, it was, why is it there? And how do I get past that? And for so much of that, it was getting accountable, getting surrounding myself with not only younger leaders that I can mentor to make sure that they don't have these same pitfalls, but older ones that I can say, hey, come slap me around, like come sit in my service and tell me what I'm doing wrong. Like come and get me out of this funk. But one of the best things that I started to do, and it had to do with age and trying to think of a future and longevity and everything like that. And just a regular de-stressor that I needed was a workout group, like just a bunch of guys. And it started by walking by a guy's home gym and saying, hey, what do you do with that? Oh, nothing. I move it from house to house whenever we move. I don't use it at all. I said, well, how about Monday we do that? And so we did that, but it was just two guys and we were kind of like-minded and stuff. And so nothing really upset either one of us. And so we went over and walked over to another church and told the other pastor that we kind of knew, hey, you need to work out with us. And he said, yes. And so he showed up that Monday. And then what started with the Monday turned into a Monday and Tuesday, and then turned into Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Now Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we work out and our wives appreciate it because we don't yell at them. We yell at each other. We ask theology questions to each other. We pray for one another. It's now five guys, but we were all laying hands on a guy whose wife was going into surgery and he was scared out of his mind. And so it's that almost daily, weekly support that we need to surround ourselves. And as pastors, as you know, sometimes there's things that you can only talk to other pastors about.
Right.
And you've got to have that. You've got to have that level or levels of people that you can say, it just hit the fan and we need to deal with it. And I don't know how to deal with it. Somebody that you can say, I don't know how to deal with this. Help me. Because you can't stand up on a Sunday and say, I don't know how to deal with this.
So the podcast is called Ministry Without Hating It, right? So for you, and you kind of maybe even answered some of this, I think, but we're gonna see if there's any more, right? What is it about ministry that either you can't stand, that drives you crazy, or you might even go as far as to say, I hate this?
About my own or about ministry in general? Because I have a general hatred for people that don't treat this like a job. They would treat their time at McDonald's like, okay, I got to be at my McDonald's shift for 8 hours, but they'll come and work for a church and put in two and think, well, you know, I'm on call all the time, and don't put forth the effort that they would even put forth making a McDonald's hamburger, and then wonder why the church is in the shape that it's in. Like, come on, like, this is worth it. People are worth it. Lives are at stake here, and we're not even serving 100% beef.
Man, that's good. That is good. That's really good. So
I don't know where any of this comes from.
No, well, we're digging deep, buddy. We're digging deep. But listen, I mean, especially when we're talking about wanting to change and innovate and do things.
Right.
I mean, when we're talking about that thing that you can't stand, how do you think that directly affects or even impedes change and innovating and actually doing some things?
We don't give it the time that it needs, the dedication that it needs. We don't take it seriously enough. And that would be everything from the person working with kids. Like, the fact that you're shaping the future of the church, like, next president, it could be in your classroom. The next pastor, the next Billy Graham, the next evangelist, the whatever, the next martyr may be in your room, and you're not helping them build their faith strong enough to where they would be willing to die for it. Would be willing to pass up the drug at because you're wanting to play another youth group game, or you didn't even invest enough to make it a good game. You just did a really sucky game. Like you could do the best game. I'm not saying like put so much pressure that everything has to be 100%, but try. And it goes, and it trickles down. Like there's plenty of senior pastors that this is just a piece of cake job, and sure, show up whenever, don't have office hours, don't have times that they are there putting in. It's not a grind to them, and then it just trickles downhill.
Yeah.
And so then the whole church ends up that way. And so I've definitely been guilty of that as well. So I can't say I'm perfect at it, but
sure,
I'm putting in the time, putting in the energy, putting in the effort, and so trying to make it distraction free, energy and effort and things like that too.
Yeah. Well, and how do you, I mean, obviously a lot of this, when I'm hearing you talk, a lot of this, it seems like, well, just do it differently. Right. But that really, it boils down to a discipleship. When we talk about maybe a problem or an issue or a challenge, how do you, aside from, you know, having the conversation, how do you walk alongside somebody who's not giving the effort and therefore potentially holding you guys back from actually seeing the change, as you like to say, that you want to be?
Yeah. We've changed up a little bit of the strategy, and we're in the morphing of strategy of how to get your volunteers, instead of just trying to pull at their heartstrings or try to guilt them into it. Just get to know the people and do what a friend of mine, or what I heard his life story, and I don't know if I coined the phrase, it probably already exists and there's books about it, but the art of the shoulder tap. Just the willingness to say, I see in you. Spend some time with people. Get to know people and say, I see that you love. Every time a kid walks into the room, every time a baby walks into the room, you light up. Like you get down and play with them on their level. That is exactly who we need in our children's ministry. Hey, I listened to your story and you just love computers. We've got a sixth grader running our video camera on Sunday mornings because I listened to his parents complain for months of how he just sits behind a computer and games all day. And I said, hey, I got a better joystick that you can play with. And he was like, really? Cool, I can do that and go to church at the same time. And he's loving it, just going back there and trying to like Pac-Man me with the camera and chase me down. And so it's spending time. Jesus spent time with his disciples and he knew, hey, okay, Peter's got the tenacity to lead this thing, like, right? He knew who to send where and what, when to send them, how to pair them and everything like that because he spent time with them. And so I'm trying to teach our leaders right now, like the art of the shoulder tap. You look and you spend time with each other and you see who they are and what they're passionate about. And you call that out of them.
That's incredible. It goes along once again with what you had said even earlier of, you know, we can implement change just by looking around, just by seeing what's around us, right. You know, and it seems so simple, but it really is a profound thing that you guys are actually even seeing really just an impact just in the very simple of just, we just open our eyes is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, just open your eyes to what's around you. A funny story I heard yesterday, and this is just a shameless Easter plug here, but I've got a factory worker that was telling me he was talking to other factory guys about our Easter programming and our title for Easter, and so he was talking to people about church and inviting them to come out this Easter, and he was like, really, you just need to get off your donkey and do it. And they're like, what? What'd you just tell me? And he was like, no, that's what we're talking about this Easter. It's called Get Off Your Donkey. And they were, and that was enough to snap them out of the anti-church to say, you know what? I may try that. That sounds interesting enough that I might be there. And so, yeah, it's know your audience, know your clientele, right? As any marketer would say, it's just like know who you serve and serve them
well. So tell me this, what are some of the pitfalls or maybe things that you have learned throughout your process of looking around, you know, initiating and implementing change really through your trial and error that other leaders should watch out for or maybe just avoid altogether?
I don't know. Don't avoid them altogether, mate. Take the risk. Fail. You're going to learn more from that failure than your or somebody else's failure than anything. And so jump in, take the risk, surround yourself with great people, just like you two are to me and speak wisdom into me. Like have somebody, have a sounding board. Don't go at it all yourself. Try to get that wisdom and say, hey, I feel led to do this, but what's it going to cost? Like what's it going to cost? Because the cost of saying get off your donkey this Easter is going to upset every religious person around you. But I think if Jesus did it, then I'm okay. If having a big like picture of a tattooed Jesus talks about him taking on the sins of this world and the scars and the pain of this world onto himself and setting somebody else free upsets a religious person, well, is that the risk you're willing to take? Some of the things that we've been about is reaching the 67%, reaching the lost. And when that is one of your main values and one of your main focus, your budget's going to be tiny. It is. If your target demographic is young families, they're going to be too busy and it's going to be harder to build a connect group. Like it's going to be hard to get people to show up or get people to serve or every holiday. Like when we're a young church, young families, holidays, they go visit their parents. And so if you're banking on Christmas being your biggest thing, it's not going to be because they're going to leave the town.
Yeah.
And so you've got to know your audience and know who you're reaching and talk through, you know, what's that going to look like? And what's it gonna mean to upset the traditionalists? Right? Like one bonus is you don't get a bunch of church hoppers. like, you don't get a lot of people coming from this church to this church. They're like, oh, you guys do that. Oh, okay, I'm good. Like that's a little bit too edgy. That doesn't. You don't have the chairs set up the same way that I had in my church. So I'm not sure about that. There's not a center aisle. So I don't feel my warm and fuzzies when I walk into there. So
I can hear maybe some people say, all right, I'm not as creative of a thinker as Pastor Billy. But what would be your advice to someone who would say, I'm not wired like he is?
Get yourself somebody that is, or get somebody like surround yourself with people that are different than you. Don't surround yourself with people with yes people. Like, surround yourself with people that are going to challenge you. Surround yourself with people that are going to come up with the ideas. They're out there. They exist. Search for them. Know your surroundings. Get out and involved in your environment and search for people. And no, like, one of the things that we're tossing around and have reached out in our community is just an open mic night on a Friday night. Why? Because churches need more musicians. And so give some musicians a place to play and then go listen to them, and you can hear if they're good and you can talk to them and you can get to know them and create an environment for them. Because once again, here on the south side of town, farthest away from downtown, none of those things exist. Yeah. There is no bar here on this side of town. There is no live music on this side of town. So, okay. Yeah. Well, people love the arts. People love music. People love a place to gather. And so why can't it be the church?
I'll get you out on this. This is the final question, but maybe it's the starting point for some people. And a lot of times, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, the biggest battle sometimes in implementing anything is just getting started, right? And so that being said, what is something practical that you would say to people for any leader who just needs to get started?
Get started on changing things?
Yes.
Change something. Like, change a bulletin. Change a seating arrangement. Change the lobby. Change the type of coffee you drink. Like, like, do something that is different, because you might find that you like it or that you don't. And then you can change the next thing, and then you can change the next thing, and you can change the next thing. And so you can start somewhere.
That's right. That's right. That's awesome. So just to kind of recap, look around, right? See what's going on right around you.
It's happening everywhere around you.
That's right. That's right. And
somebody's
see what
walking
is changing.
To the dog, right? Somebody's
that's
walking
right.
their dog. Somebody can't walk their dog and they need a dog park. Like there's something that's happening around you, and there's some need that you can meet.
That's amazing. Well, Pastor Billy, I want to say thank you for your time today. Thank you for all
Thanks
that
for having
you've
me.
Absolutely,
honored.
Absolutely.
Hopefully it's beneficial.
I think so. I mean, it's just so practical. You know, sometimes the change is just actually just stepping out and just doing something different and then moving from there. Or bringing people around you who can actually help be the change and begin to initiate that, and having the courage to actually step forward in that. And so thank you so much for what you passed along here today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us for this episode of Ministry Without Hating It. We hope it's helped you take a step further towards loving what you do through the wisdom of others. We want to again thank today's guest, Pastor Billy Holding, for sharing all about change and innovation and really seeing change all around you. If you'd like to connect further with Pastor Billy, you can visit their church's website, which is innovationchurch.cc, or he has agreed to make his email available to you if you'd like to reach out. And it is very simply thatpastorguy, all one word, @gmail.com. And as always, you can find more episodes and resources at withouthatingit.com. And don't forget to subscribe to Ministry Without Hating It wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss out on our bi-weekly episode releases. That's all for now. We'll see you next time.